our keynote speaker. Dr. Marsha Farney was elected in 2012 to represent District 20 in the Texas House of Representatives. Representative Farney's district consists of Burnet, Milam, and the northern part of Williamson County, including Georgetown, the county seat, and Sun City. Representative Farney earned her BS and MS degrees in education from Texas A&M. And her PhD in curriculum and instruction from the University of Texas, Austin.
Right. Something for everybody.
Qualifying her to serve as a counselor and a principal. Prior to her election to the House of Representatives, she was elected to the District 10 seat of the State Board of Education, serving 16 counties and 1.8 million residents. An award-winning former classroom teacher, middle school and high school counselor, an adjunct professor at Texas A&M University of Commerce, Representative Farney has relevant experience at every level of public education. She brings the unique perspective of a public school parent and an experienced educator to her role as a state representative, an active civic and philanthropic leader in her community for many years. She served as a board member for several organizations, including the Stephen Williamson Hospital Women's Foundation Board, the Williamson Museum, Main Street Advisory Board, and the Chisholm Trail Community Foundation. She enjoys supporting organizations that make a difference in the lives of children, such as the Children's Advocacy Center and the Boys and Girls Clubs. Representative Farney is a lifelong Republican and fourth generation Texan with family roots dating back to Texas when Texas was a young republic. She and her husband, Brian, reside in Georgetown and enjoy spending time with their three children and two grandchildren. While education is her background, Representative Farney is fiercely pro-life. The Texas Alliance for Life eagerly looks forward to working with her in the legislature. And would you please help me welcome Representative Dr. Marsha Farney.
And it really is a pleasure to get to be with you today. But I will tell you, do I have both mics going? Is that okay? I've got one here. I want you to know that at the Capitol, when we see a bill come across that we know Joe Boynton is affiliated with, the level of trust just soars. Because it's true. Sincerely, when I do say to you that he is an honorable, respectable, gracious gentleman who lives his faith with his interactions with us in the Capitol. Let's give him another round of applause. We couldn't be more pleased to have him at the helm of this important cause of protecting unborn children. He is someone I trust. And I value his friendship. Enough about Joe. Let's move on. As Davida so eloquently mentioned, and she made it sound so wonderful, but what it is just working in your community, isn't it? Being a part of where you live and making a difference. And for me, community service, which I saw modeled by my parents, which, by the way, my experience growing up was extremely blessed. I had wonderful Christian parents who led us in the ways of knowing about the golden rule and that what Jesus gave to us and what he sacrificed we should do and give it to others. I grew up living in a home where there was trust and safety and did not realize until I started teaching that that was not the case for every child in my classroom. And that's one of the reasons I support the Children's Advocacy Center and the Boys and Girls Club. I remember the first time I had a student in my classroom was taking off a jacket, and I saw some spots on her shoulders and around her, underneath her shirt under here. And I said, "Oh, baby, what happened? Looks like you fell into a tree limb that stuck you." And she said, "No," and she gave the man's name and said he burned her. And I said, "Oh, now, why do you say that?" And I said, "Really?" And I did not even know that kind of behavior existed. And I said, "Sugar, let's go down and see the nurse. He's burning her with cigarettes." Yeah.
It was my first time to get to meet CPS and realize that children need a voice. And you can see as it works, now working and doing things with children who are here and have great value. I also know that children who are not yet born have great value. And they also need us to stand up for them. So, as some people like to say, it's just a cellular mass. But it's a cellular mass with a beating heart and arms and legs and fingers and toes and a face. It's a baby that God has knit together in the womb of that mother. And so I'm thrilled to be with you who value what God has made. And, you know, I'm a woman, as you know. But I am, as I said last session, a Texas woman. And I do not feel there is a war on women by you or by my party. I am a Republican. And there are Democrats that support what we do as well. But regardless of party affiliation, the war against women, I'm not a part of a war against women. I'm thankful to God to be a woman and have the wonderful gift to have a separate life grow inside of me. Yes, it's my body, but if you've got children, especially teenagers, you know they are separate and independent from you. Children. My oldest is 36, and she's done her duty. She's married. I have two grandchildren. I've checked her off. I'm pleased with her. My 31-year-old son is single. If you have someone available that age range, we need to visit. He's very handsome. He's an Aggie with a degree in finance. He's a good guy. And then the Lord blessed me a third time. When I was working on my dissertation, and it's true, I do have degrees from A&M and Commerce and then UT, so it's a split personality that I have. But what I want you to know is I became very ill working on my dissertation. And it was a 600-page document by the time I got through. I thought that was what was wrong with me. I went to the doctor, and I was like in tears. I said, something wrong. I am sick. I'm sleeping like 16 hours. I'm exhausted.
It happened to me.
She said, well, let's do some tests. And you know what? I was blessed with my third precious son. I am 56 now. I was 43 then. I was considered at risk because of my advanced age. I had to take a year off of working on my dissertation, which is okay, because I lay in bed and protected and cherished my time with my son to grow inside. Raising my son, because what a joy. My husband provides for our family while I was able to stay home and to take care of him. And by the way, my husband and I have an agreement you might enjoy. What we talk about is, you know, when I went back to work on my dissertation, he said, you know what you could do, sweetheart? You could go get a law degree instead. You'd be through quicker, make a lot more money. And, you know, my husband is an attorney, so I said, you know what, sweetheart? Why don't you make the money? I'll make a difference. The State Board of Education. And I thought, well, you know, I've had experience in every level of public education. I've been a classroom teacher. I've been a middle school counselor, high school counselor, taught at the university level. For a while, I was an education consultant traveling around the southern part of the United States. Once jumped over to Washington State for a conference. But I went from Florida all the way to California and the Carolinas, loving it, having a good time. That's when I got blessed and got so sick. But while I was doing that, I realized it makes a difference if you've been in the classroom and if you've had a child in the public school system. I don't know how you feel about public schools, but Article 7 of our Constitution charges the legislature with a duty to make adequate provision for an efficient system of and for the support and maintenance of public free schools. That is what our Constitution says. And until we have a constitutional amendment to change it, that's been my job to work and to do that. So while running for that office, I decided to run for the State Board of Education because I thought, I have time. My son is now in third grade and he feels like he no longer needs me. So I decided, to run for office. And it was 16 counties, as Davida mentioned, 1.8 million people. I think I still have some signs out between here and Sherman. We purchased over 600, about 200 something got stolen, so we bought another 300, almost 900 signs we put out. And you know what? The Lord blessed and we won. And it was a joy to serve on the State Board of Education. Then when my dear friend, Dr. Charles Schwertner, who is now a senator, serving in a great capacity over Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate, at the time he was serving on the House seat that I now currently occupy so well. So when he decided to run, I realized that you could do more from the House. You could actually craft legislation and make a difference in the lives of children whose only educational opportunity that they may have available is the traditional public schools. I support a parent's right and their responsibility to provide whatever educational means is necessary for your child. If it's homeschooling, we need to support it. If it's private schools, we need to support it. If they need charter schools, whatever, a parent knows what's best for their child. That once I got there, I did the big happy dance because I went from the SBOE with no salary, no office space, having 16 counties, 1.8 million residents, 15 members on the State Board of Education shared, 3 TEA staffers. I jumped up big time. I was in heaven good because I had a beautiful state capitol office, $7,200 a year. Big time. I was rolling in the money. I had an office space for my gas. And now I only have 2 in the 3rd counties, and I adore every bit of my district. I am so blessed. I have all of Vernon, all of Milam, and then I have the heart of Williamson County, which is we have Georgetown and Sun City. And that is a joy. As you know, you saw earlier what we did in supporting for House Bill 2, where Joe so courageously and eloquently led the charge to make a difference and save lives. You know, I was at a meeting one time where we had a gentleman who was a part of rescuing children during Europe, during a war, during the war. And as he went in, he would go back in and hide children in the back of vehicles and under seats, and he rescued somewhere around like 120 or so children. And then they came back and they had a surprise meeting, and guess who was in the audience when they honored him? Those children. Imagine it will be there someday when Joe and when you are standing there, all the children you're going to see. It's going to be awesome. Serving last session on the Public Education Committee and proudly stood to make sure that we stood for what was right and fought to keep Planned Parenthood out of our public schools. I'm going to get to that in a minute because I'm jumping ahead in my notes, but it was appalling. And I don't think I'm a prude, but I could not believe what we were seeing because we actually got to look at the books. I'm going to come to that in a minute. I do want you to know this because of sacrifices of others, that even I am able to stand here and speak to you today and enjoy being in your company. People must take a stand when they see something that is wrong and make it right.
That's right.
We have to take a stand. When you find something that you know needs to be addressed and you take the stand, God will bless you in your efforts. Despite what the particular issues are, one person who made it possible for me even to speak to you today was, believe it or not, Susan B. Anthony. She did what the women's suffrage movement, the things that she did, whether she was Christian or not, or all these things, she led the charge to allow women to have the right to vote. And the greatest obstacle she said they fought was allowing women to speak in public in this company. So thank you, Susan B. Who courageously stood against a wrong and worked to make it right was Winston Churchill. And the British people took a costly stand to fight the evil of Nazism. And Winston Churchill shows us, though, by looking at what the British people did, you know as well as I do, when you take a stand, it's going to cost you something. It's a sacrifice to take a stand. The British had over 40,000 lives lost and over 1 million homes were damaged or destroyed. But the British people stood strong despite their sacrifice. Churchill said, "You have enemies? Good. Do you know why? Because it shows you stood for something at some time in your life. Do you have enemies? We do. Because we're in a battle. I was talking to Joe a while ago. It doesn't look like we're in a war, but we are. We're in a war. We're in a battle for good versus evil. We're in a war to protect. I think someday we'll be as shocked about what we're doing now with babies as we do now look back at slavery. As we look back and see travesties that have been done to other people, to see that we allow in our country, where we value God and our God-given rights, that we had children who were sacrificed because of inconvenience, because of cost, or because of disabilities. I can proudly say the Texas legislature stood for life last session, and I assure you I will continue to stand again and will stand firm for the values we hold dear. I was looking at your 84th legislative agenda and your priorities. I was very excited to see those. Several of those Joe mentioned a while ago, one about the reformation of the judicial bypass law. Do you know right now in our schools, they will not even give my son or your son an aspirin or an Advil unless you give permission. We have three bills that have been filed so far this session already allowing a child who goes into anaphylactic shock to be able to use your EpiPen to save his life. Because as it stands right now, they won't do it because it's not in the law. And yet, we can circumvent a parent's right and responsibility to take care of their child and go and have a surgical procedure and one that can have as devastating emotional and physical consequences as an abortion. We need to close that. Then to exclude Planned Parenthood, I've told you, I tell you what, it was embarrassing actually sitting there with the gentleman around passing this book around going, oh my goodness, look what I'm looking at with him and him. You know, this is crazy. And then to think my seventh grade student is going to be looking at that in class as well. It was appalling. And vignettes were in there where you role play a gentleman and a girl, boy and a girl sitting on the parent's bed, parents are not at home, what you can do without actually getting pregnant. And parents were out, they didn't understand. They won't understand your feelings. They're old. It is unbelievable that they're trying to cause a wedge between the child and their parent. And we absolutely will take a stand on that, I assure you, this session. The next one is the automatic loss of paternity of a child that's conceived and raped with a convicted rapist. We've actually had that happen that came up last session about a convicted rapist trying to be able, who from prison was trying to get in contact with the child and to have a relationship. And he had had multiple accounts against him. And the child wanted nothing to do with him. The mother wanted nothing to do with him. But yet they had to let him have contact with her. We want to protect unborn children with disabilities. I have a question for you. Is the value of a person's life diminished because of a disability? Helen Keller doesn't think so. She had, at 19 months, contracted scarlet fever, was blind and deaf, and she became a crusader for handicapped people all across the world and was an author, a lecturer, and a strong leader for individuals' rights. I don't think Marlene Maitland, an actress, an Academy Award-winning actress who was born with a genetic defect in her cochlea, in her ear, and was deaf, she would say she had value. And I know Stevie Wonder, who was born premature, and he had blindness, the one who gave us the gift that I share with my three children. We have a special song. You know what it is? I just called to say I love you. You should be glad he tried to sing it. It is my favorite song of him. He had his first record contract when he was 11 years old. He had a disability, but did his life matter? Say yes.
Yes.
What about Stephen Hawking? Who got ALS, diagnosed with ALS at 21, who's wheelchair bound, can't speak without the aid of a computer. He's a world-renowned physicist. Does his life matter?
Yes.
I love it when you talk to me. What about FDR, who got polio? Did his life diminish because he was paralyzed?
No.
You knew what to say. And then you know what? What about what we talked about, the legislative priority also, is to provide education for parents of children with Down syndrome. Have you spent time with a child with Down syndrome?
Yes.
I take someone who has, and that's Jean Stallings. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
He was someone who lived in the community next door to us when I lived in Paris, Texas, up in Lamar County. In a little town called Powderly, Gene Stallings lived there. And we knew Gene's son, Johnny, John Mark Stallings, who was born with Down syndrome. Gene Stallings was a 1992 AFCA Coach of the Year, FWAA Coach of the Year, Paul Bryant Coach of the Year, SEC Coach of the Year, Walter Camp Coach of the Year, 1994 SEC Coach of the Year. He was inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame as a coach in 2010. He had 7 bowl games, won 6. He coached with Tom Landry for 14 seasons, was a part of them winning in a Super Bowl game. He says the greatest reward in his life, you know what it is? It's raising Johnny. Raising Johnny. That is his greatest joy in his life. He said looking into Johnny's eyes was like looking in and seeing God's love, acceptance, and forgiveness, and joy of life. He said there was a purity about Johnny that he didn't have. I think maybe Johnny wasn't the one with the disability. Maybe it's really us. Because they have a capability of just loving you and accepting you. So when we think about if you have a disability, your life doesn't have value. If you have Down syndrome, your life doesn't have value. There are plenty who would disagree with that. I also agree with adoption being a compassionate alternative to stopping a beating heart. Paul and Clara adopted a baby boy. The father was an Arab who was from Syria, and the lady who he was having a child with was a Swiss American Catholic. Both parties, both families objected to their union. But she decided to give birth, and Paul and Clara adopted this little boy. And Paul was a carpenter and mechanic who loved to tinker with electronics. And his son, Steve Jobs, became the co-founder and former CEO of Apple. What about Rex and Olivia, who adopted a baby boy? The mother died 5 years later, and the grandmother took over raising this young boy. And she instilled values in him that were like, hard work is good for you. If you're going to do a job, do it well. Keep your word and respect others. He grew up to have the third largest hamburger chain in the world, Dave Thomas with Wendy's. He created the Dave Thomas Adoption Foundation and received praise for Presidents Clinton and Bush. Then there's Pat Edna, who adopted a baby girl who grew up to be a Grammy Award-winning singer, Faith Hill, the most beautiful woman in I think ever. Then there was a young boy named Nelson, who when he was 9, his father died. And his father's friend, who was a South African chief, adopted him. This boy grew up seeing terrible atrocities in his home country. He grew up to become a champion to fight against apartheid. And Nelson Mandela was jailed for 27 years, then received the Nobel Peace Prize and became the first black president of South Africa. From humble beginnings came a president. One of my favorites says, and you should know this young lady's name, Malala Yousafzai, the young Pakistani girl. She's the one who stood up for something she believed in, fought against what was wrong, trying to make it right, and said girls deserve an education. And then one day the Taliban boarded her school bus, found out which one she was, and shot her 3 times, once in the head. And she was transferred to England for medical care. Death threats to this day continue against her because they said the Taliban says if she speaks about things that the Quran doesn't support, even though she's a child, she can be killed. And she's not being silenced. She's the youngest winner now of the Nobel Peace Prize. And now Pakistan has their first right to education bill. And she's listed as one of the most 100 most influential people in the world. She said, they thought that the bullets would silence us, but they failed. And out of this attempt to silence me came the voices of thousands. During that assassination attempt on her life, something did die, and that was fear. And what was born was courage and determination to do what was right. And that's where we are today. We will get threats. We may be called narrow-minded and a lot of other things, but we must continually have in the back of our mind that beating heart who has no voice but yours and mine. And we have to continue to protect the unborn children and fight to be their voice. I'm going to close with another Winston Churchill quote, and it says, I love this, I want you to believe this with me. It says, never give in. Never, 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 never. Four nevers. Nothing great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force, never yield to the apparently overwhelming mind of the enemy. And I want you to know, in this next legislative session, I will never give in to stop protecting unborn children. Thank you.
Sergeant Farney, you need to ask her.